Good morning, Andrew Grossman on behalf of the appellant Lucid Group USA. May it please the court. Texas's prohibition on manufacturers like Lucid selling vehicles within the state is irrational in the extreme and therefore fails rational basis scrutiny. Blocking new competitors from entering the market only reduces competition and injures consumers. And forcing Texans to buy the vehicles they want from out of state adds expense and inconvenience while preventing the state from policing those sales. The prohibition is pure economic protectionism, just like the direct sales ban the court rejected in St. Joseph Abbey. There is no legitimate reason that Lucid shouldn't be able to sell its vehicles in Texas, just like Apple sells iPhones and Tiffany sells its rings. None of the asserted rationales for the prohibition makes any sense. I'd like to address three of them. First, the defendants say that it promotes competition. That is absurd. A barrier to market entry by new competitors only undermines competition. Second, the defendants cite the Tesla decision's discussion of the possible harms of vertical integration, but that's also irrational. A direct sales-only manufacturer can't leverage its market position to unfairly compete against its dealers because it doesn't have any. And it would be absurd to claim that a company like Lucid can somehow leverage vertical integration to monopolize the market for new vehicles. Lucid is but one of many players in a crowded and competitive marketplace. Third, the defendants say the prohibition protects consumers with respect to warranty service, but the prohibition has nothing to do with warranty service. Texas laws authorizes manufacturers to provide service, and Lucid does so today. Just like with the health and safety rationale in St. Joseph Abbey, there is a complete disconnect between the sales ban here and any service rationale. Whether or not Lucid gets to sell its vehicles within Texas, Texas law allows it to provide service. The defendant's other asserted rationales simply don't clear the plausibility threshold. Sure, independent dealers create jobs, they pay taxes, and they offer other services that consumers might want. So does Lucid, and it would do more of those things, but for the prohibition. Once again, the prohibition is irrationally undermining the state's asserted interests.
Mr. Grossman, what do you seek for the court to do here today, specifically?
We think that the court can and should reverse based on the record before it. There were cross motions for summary judgment, and our contention is that there is no rational basis for the prohibition as demonstrated by that record, as well as the broader history.
Would we remand? We wouldn't render, would we?
The court certainly has within its power the ability to vacate and remand. Yes, Your Honor.
I'm not foreshadowing, so don't get excited about it, but I just was just wondering if we wouldn't say there's no rational basis, therefore you win. That's not really what we would do, would it be?
Your Honor, of course we defer to the court. I merely point out that this does come to the court. The posture is on cross motions for summary judgment. So the court has a range of options at its disposal as to how it would resolve the appeal. I think it speaks volumes here that the state, as well as the Auto Dealers Association, go to such great lengths to avoid getting into the mix of rational basis review. I mean, typically that's something that defendants are happy to talk about. But like in a case here, it's strange. I mean, I've never seen so much ink spilled disputing the deprivation of a liberty interest when state law prohibits the plaintiff's business and denies the plaintiff a license. Then there's the argument that Lucid can't bring as applied claims when this court and the Supreme Court consider them all the time.
What about the argument that you don't really have an as applied challenge? It's really just the same as Tesla because you don't really have all the facts to show how you're as applied. That's one of the arguments made in the brief. Can you address that?
Sure, Your Honor. I mean, I don't think that the nature of our as-applied challenge is any different from the as-applied challenge in St. Joseph Abbey. I mean, recall there that the operative statute defined funeral directing to include any activities that relate to the management of funerals, which was interpreted to include casket sales. So that was an as-applied case. Here, you know, the relevant fact is that with respect to the asserted state interests, you know, the main peg that, you know, carries some weight is a manufacturer's ability to compete with, to use its superior market position to compete with its own dealers.
I guess I'm just trying to understand how an as-applied challenge gets you any place that a facial challenge doesn't get. I mean, they just seem to be, with regard to these facts and these claims, they seem to be the same to me.
I don't think,
and the facial challenges have already been made.
Your Honor, I don't think that's right in this circumstance. We didn't plead a facial challenge, and the reason we didn't is that the statutory prohibition. So when I refer to the prohibition here, I'm only referring to the statutory prohibition as applies to direct sales only manufacturers that do not have independent dealers, but the statutory prohibition applies to all manufacturers. So that includes the Fords and General Motors of the world that do sell and already have independent franchise dealers.
So you would have a different, so you could find lawful ways that the statute could apply in certain circumstances, which would make a facial challenge not appropriate, but if as to your particular client's situation where there is no dealership franchise, then it's unique. That's why it's an as applied. Is that the argument, basically?
Yes, Your Honor. In other words, Lucid and direct sales only manufacturers stand outside of the rationale for
so
the prohibition.
So the statute wouldn't be struck down as facially unsound because there could be lawful applications, but yours is not one.
Exactly, Your Honor. That is how we pleaded it, and that is how we are arguing it before this court as well. And again, I would note this is exactly the same structure of claim that the court ultimately awarded relief upon in St. Joseph Abbey, and it's also identical to the nature of the claim in the Craig Miles decision of the Sixth Circuit. So
does
there's nothing.
Does your client do this direct sales throughout the country? Is this? Can you tell us a little bit about your client and its model?
Sure, Your Honor. Lucid is a direct sales-only manufacturer, not only with respect to Texas, but with respect to its sales nationwide. It's licensed to sell vehicles directly to consumers in, I believe at the time we created the record in this state, seven states, but it may well be more at this point. In states where it is not licensed to sell directly to consumers, it is nonetheless able to sell to them through its out-of-state dealerships. So, for example, Lucid is licensed to sell in, I believe, California, and so a Texas resident could purchase a Lucid vehicle from Lucid's California dealership and then have it sent into Texas for that consumer. The problem is that many consumers, and indeed the auto dealer's briefing says it's most consumers, prefer the traditional auto buying experience. They want to go to the dealership, they want to talk with somebody about the vehicles, they might want to take a test drive, and they want to complete the sale at that dealership. And so the prohibition absolutely prohibits Lucid from undertaking that sort of sales activity within the state of Texas.
Can you answer the argument on the briefing that says that your client is not effectively foreclosed from engaging in the occupation, but only from one narrow part of the occupation. The idea that Lucid can do everything a dealer can do except sell new cars. Can you address that?
So I think that's at odds, Your Honor, with a long line of Fifth Circuit precedent, recognizing that much less severe impositions nonetheless deprive a liberty interest. I would cite the Martin case, which discusses at least one line of that precedent regarding the practice of medicine and other professions, recognizing that even a narrow restrictions, for example, that applies only to a single town or a single geographical area, is sufficient to deprive a liberty interest. In this case, of course, Lucid is deprived of undertaking sales activity within the entire state of Texas. So that would go well above and beyond what was at issue in Martin, as well as all the other cases that it cited. I would also note the Stidham case. In that instance, the argument was made, well, the person who was operating a motorcycle funeral procession business and was accused of violating Texas law because he lacked a license, he could have gone ahead and gotten a license, and that would have allowed him to undertake his activities. The court said, no, he doesn't have to do that. You've told him he can't undertake this activity, and therefore that is an imposition that is of his liberty interests. Likewise, with Lucid, the argument here isn't that Lucid could even obtain a license. I think the defendants both recognize that Lucid is ineligible for a license. Their suggestion instead is that Lucid could undertake a completely different occupation altogether rather than being a motor vehicle dealer, as it already is in a number of states throughout the country. It could become a distributor and sell to dealers in the state of Texas. I would respectfully submit that that's inconsistent with Stidham.
Can you address the Lee Optical case?
Yes, Your Honor. It probably won't surprise you to hear that we think the Lee Optical case actually helps us. You know, the defendant's argument in this case is that, well, the state can just structure the market however it sees fit, and if it wants to interpose a middleman, well, it gets to do that. Lee Optical actually considered, like, you know, who are these people who are the middleman, and what is it that they are actually adding in terms of state interest? And in that instance, the requirement that a person obtain a prescription prior to having new glasses made or was, you know, the court explained, it was based on a public health rationale because somebody would have to be examined by a doctor in the course of getting that prescription, and that could help to identify potential medical issues they might have. Here, I think the circumstance is exactly the opposite. The other side has never claimed, and I don't think there's any rational basis to believe, that auto dealers have any particular expertise with respect to, say, Lucid vehicles or another manufacturer's vehicles that the manufacturers don't have. But it's actually worse than that, because there is a training, an education and training requirement that goes with the dealership license. Somebody who obtains that license has to go through training. In this instance, the sales are being channeled to out-of-state dealerships, and so that education is never even taking place. It doesn't apply to Lucid, and Lucid isn't eligible to participate in that because it's not able to obtain a dealer license. So the state, you know, to the extent that Lee Optical has any relevance here, I think it merely shows that this is not only irrational, the prohibition here, but that it also frustrates Texas's asserted interests.
Do you have anything else for us?
Your Honor, if the court has no further questions, I reserve the remainder of my time.
I have one question. what's your take on the view of the state's interest in avoiding vertical integration?
Your Honor, we take Tesla at its word that there are possible harms of vertical integration. That, I believe, is a direct quote from Tesla, and that the plaintiff in a case like this one bears the burden of rebutting them. And so I think we've done that across the board with respect to everything that we could conceive of, as well as every interest that the other side has put on the table.
Couldn't vertical integration also be very helpful, though? The idea that vertical integration in itself is a bad thing, that you have to show some consumer harm, and as you've explained, the consumer harm is on the other side.
Your Honor, we agree, of course. I mean, vertical integration is rampant throughout the economy because it tends to reduce costs.
It's good for consumers.
Right. It tends to reduce costs and therefore provides a greater surplus to consumers.
Unless there's a health or safety or something else thing going on.
Right. And so we agree with that, Your Honor. But, you know, we think that, you know, there simply is no evidence in this instance that there is any potential harm. And again, like I said, we take Tesla at its word. It spoke of the possible harms of vertical integration. And so we've taken that seriously, and we've addressed that with
but
experts.
But maybe it's not the court's role to interfere. And if Texas wants to do something that doesn't help consumers, maybe it should be allowed to do so.
Well, Your Honor,
it can experiment and see if it does help or not.
Your Honor, two responses. One, St. Joseph Abbey, of course, expressly rejected Louisiana's argument that it can simply structure a market however it sees fit. I mean, that literally was one of the state's arguments in the case. And second, with apologies, Chief Judge Elrod, for quoting back one of your own eloquent statements, rational basis review is a standard of review. It is not a rubber stamping exercise. If the court has no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ortner.
May it please the court. Texas has a rational interest in prohibiting direct sales of automobiles by manufacturers. And as you just noted, Chief Judge Elrod, it is ultimately not the court's role to assess the reasonableness of Texas's decision, as long as there is a conceivable rational basis. This court in Ford and International Truck looked at this exact statute and said that it
Counsel,
had.
I'm not sure if it's how close you are to the microphone, or there's a little bit of an echo.
An echo, is that better?
Oh,
no?
I don't know that helped.
Didn't that help? No?
That's
better? Okay, I apologize. So this court in Ford and International Truck said that they had no hesitancy in upholding Texas's law as rational. And in Tesla, this court...
But those cases have dealerships.
Sure.
That's a completely different situation.
I would really point the court...
If you don't have a dealership, a franchise dealership.
Yes, Chief Judge Elrod, I would just point the court to the Tesla decision. There, you had a similar situated plaintiff. Lucid, in this case, actually concedes that they are similarly situated to Tesla in every respect. They say that there's no difference in their business model that makes this case different than the Tesla case. Tesla, in the Tesla case, made the exact same arguments. They said it is irrational to treat those manufacturers that don't franchise, that don't want dealers.
A facial challenge, which would mean you would have to find it in every application, it would have to be unlawful, but there would be lawful applications. And so the Salerno and all of that.
Sure,
that's why this is an as-applied. So Tesla had brought an as-applied challenge. Tesla doesn't speak to that.
Two points on that, Your Honor. First of all, in the Tesla case, they did actually bring an as-applied challenge as well. If you go back to the record, the district court, they had an as-applied challenge. The court in Tesla does not distinguish or discuss the differences, but they actually did have an as-applied challenge. But secondly,
it wasn't really dealt with in that way.
But second, they made the exact same argument here. They said that relevant classification should be the difference between franchising dealer manufacturers and non-franchising manufacturers. And the court in Tesla said, actually, that's not the case. On a rational basis, the relevant classification is the one that's created by the regulatory scheme, which here is the difference between all manufacturers and all dealers. And they rejected Tesla's argument. They said that it is an attempt to force a more rigorous standard of scrutiny than rational basis requires. Respectfully,
what is the basis for having this? I haven't heard any help to consumers or safety or what is the rational basis?
Yeah. So, Your Honor,
the desire to have this economic model, what is the basis for it?
There's several.
I'm dying to hear that answer. So make
sure.
It loud and clear.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you, Judge Graves. So, in the record here, the state and the dealership association provided numerous economic experts pointing out the dealership model, the benefits it had for consumers, that it ultimately lowers costs for consumers. They say it raises costs, but that's a disputed fact. Where the state has an interest to say otherwise.
If it's a disputed fact, then we should reverse the summary judgment and send the case back.
No, Your Honor. On a rational basis review.
Is it a disputed fact on whether it's actually helpful or harmful?
That's not the case under a rational basis. The question is there a conceivable state interest? And if there's a debate, experts on both sides.
There has to be some legitimate governmental interest.
Yes,
if
there's debated evidence on both sides.
All right, I'm dying to hear it.
Sure. So, thank you, Your Honor. So the state's interest is the long-term stability of the dealership model, which has provided benefit to consumers, limited vertical integration, prevented monopolies.
We've always done it that way, so let's
It's not just that we've always done it that way. It's that the auto industry is one where there's been a long history of attempts by manufacturers to sneak in and undercut dealers. The state is able to say, this is a line we're going to draw, and
now tell me why. Let's assume that's exactly what they want to do, undercut dealers. Tell me why that doesn't benefit consumers.
It does benefit consumers. For instance,
now I'm interested.
Yeah. So the Stockton expert report, for instance, it starts on page 1989 of the record. Mr. Stockton, who's an economic expert, says the dealership model leads to higher overall investment in retail capacity. Increased incentives for a broader network, so you have more stores in different locations.
You're saying the dealership model.
Yeah, the dealership model benefits consumers, and the state, this law furthers that model by preventing undercutting it. One thing that's really important to note, my friend on the other side said that there's a different occupation, that they're engaging in a different occupation than other manufacturers. That's not the case.
So do you have an example of vertical integration where it's one that didn't benefit consumers?
Well, there might be other markets where vertical integration is beneficial, but this court in Ford and International Truck looked at the history specifically of the automobile market and said, this market is one where there's a long history of vertical integration harming consumers. that Texas has a rational basis, and they said there's no hesitancy even in the Ford case of saying
that it
benefits
consumers.
So you
had an instance of vertical integration and demonstrated harm to consumers?
In the automobile market, yes.
What example is that? Where is that one?
So a lot of economists would disagree with that, to the extent that economics has anything to do with the actual study of economics has anything to do with what Texas is doing.
So there's as I mentioned earlier, Judge
Higginbotham.
It's something
called protectionism, and it's something called politics.
Well, as I mentioned, Judge Higginbotham, here we have.
They're the very powerful lobbies, and I'm not being critical of them. That's the reality of the political world, and that's part of government. But to protect their interests.
I would say, Your Honor,
But the constraints upon that have to do with maintaining a free competitive market for the public itself. Your argument drifts away from the basic economics that are here all over this case, and hotly disputed by very, very able economists.
I would say, judging about them, that's the point. Here there's competing economists that disagree, and therefore it's up to the state to weigh the evidence.
Slow down just a little bit. You talk faster than
I apologize.
People think.
So here you have experts.
We have time to hear for you.
Of course.
You slow down and just answer my question.
Sure. You have here competing experts on both sides. I really point the court to the Stockton expert report. The arguments about the, specifically
well,
with
everybody
the
has competing experts because you hire them. Now, I'm talking about economics and economic theory.
Sure.
Pardon, I'm no antitrust lawyer, so I drift sometimes.
What I would say is, if you look at the Stockton report, he talks about why the auto industry is unique, in that you have dealers that have very low margins. And what they do is they provide the capital and they provide the infrastructure that manufacturers often need. And because of that, they actually, the double marginalization theory that the other side has doesn't happen. The costs are not raised very much for consumers at all, and they provide additional services that consumers need. That's what Mr. Stockton's expert report talks about. So specifically for the industry of the auto industry.
That protects an automobile dealer.
Sure.
From competition from his supplier. And that's because the supplier has an economic control, obviously. So
I would again point the court to the Tesla case. The court rejected the exact argument that my friend on the other side is making here. they argued that there's no rational basis if there's no dealerships involved, that Tesla did not have dealerships, and therefore it's irrational to apply the law to them. The court said that the law protects other interests, not just protecting dealers, that it doesn't just prohibit abuse of power by a manufacturer against its dealers.
Well, it says that Ford can open you have a Ford dealer, and the Ford can't come in and undercut its dealer. And the state's interest is in protecting the public so that the Ford dealer can support his customers, et cetera. And the state has vital interest in seeing that package is there. But that doesn't respond to this, to what's happening here, is that the automobile is being redefined. What you're seeing is a change in product, which is trying to travel on a road that's built for a very different product itself. See, we had the same problem with railroads, and we had the same problem with others. But the electric car differs in several fundamental ways in terms of service and so forth. And it affects a lot of other industries.
Mm. Two points, Your Honor. First of all, again, I'd urge the court to look at the Tesla case. The court rejected the exact argument that my friend on the other side is making, that it's irrational because there's no dealers involved.
But see, if the state said, okay, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Free cards. What happens? What do you envision happening that you're trying to prohibit?
We envision if Lucid and other direct sale manufacturers come in, other manufacturers are going to find ways to undercut the dealership model. that in a couple of years, like, the record shows that other manufacturers like VinFast and Fisker.
Just talk a little slower.
I'm so sorry.
VinFast. Please listen. 1 second. You're going to undercut the dealership model. Those are quick words. In what respect?
So they're going to come in. Other manufacturers are going to find ways to say that they are, you know, just selling directly to consumers. Like Ford, for instance, there's an article from Forbes from 2022 on page 3205 to 3215 of the record that Ford has been, consumers, dealers are concerned that they're trying to come in to do direct sales. And then the other point is that VinFast and Fisker, who are two similar competitors to Lucid, shifted to a dealership model after a couple of years of trying to do direct sales. And so when they try to characterize themselves
Let me try a different question. You have a Ford dealership. Ford manufactures a car and has got its dealer. And those dealerships are very valuable because they get of the sources they get. And in turn, the dealership services those cars and takes care of them and protects them. Now, what happens is you have a different product comes in. It's an automobile, yes, but it doesn't require the maintenance of the type of maintenance and all the other support that a Ford dealership provides that you want to protect. And that's why they sell them like you're buying a wrapped piece of candy. If you like it, you drive it, plug it in, and go.
May I briefly respond to that question, Your Honor? The record does not support that. There's actually evidence in this record of electric cars having significant mechanical problems, requiring an ongoing relationship with dealers and with repairs. And the state of Texas was able to evaluate the evidence and decide whether to allow Lucid's business model. If that's right, then that might, you know, at the end of the day, win out. But Texas, as a legislator, gets to make that decision, not the court sitting as a super legislator.
But they can do them in. They can do the repairs, can't they?
Currently, they can't. They can do the repairs. Yes, that's the state's position.
So what does that have to do with anything?
It's that the record shows that the dealer model leads to better distribution of a network of repairs. Lucid does not have adequate capacity to do the repairs in the state. They have one service center here in Houston. They have a limited capacity to do this, and the dealership model has led.
How do we know that it's not enough to? How many cars are there in Houston that they have one dealership for? One repair center for.
Yeah.
How do you know that?
I would point the court to the House deposition. This is on page 2516 of the record. That's the discussion of the service capacity of Lucid, how many units they have.
But what says that it's not enough?
That's the testimony of Mr. House in his deposition, and he points to the number of cars, the capacity. He provides the evidence for that claim that they don't have the capacity, and the dealership model ultimately leads to a wider distribution of a network. It provides access for people across the state, and it ultimately benefits consumers. Thank you, Your Honors.
May it please the court. Judge Higginbotham, I'd like to begin, since there's been a lot of discussion about economics, with a clear statement: it's not all about economics. There are lots of rational bases supporting Texas law, and I'm going to start with consumer protection and conflicts of interest.
Economists would dispute that.
Your Honor, there's economists on both sides, which was why it's a decision for a legislature to make on economics. But let's talk about consumers and conflicts of interest. The Allstate versus Abbott case from this court is worth reading. In the automobile industry, Allstate Insurance, Texas outlawed insurance companies from repairing cars because there's a conflict. Allstate wants to save money. Consumers want to get their cars repaired. That same conflict exists in the automobile industry. Page 161 to 162 of the Allstate versus Abbott case identifies that very conflict.
But that's an argument for dealerships, and there's no challenge to a dealership here. Other than independent competition, they're protected and remain protected from competition from their manufacturer. They have the dealership, they're the Ford dealer, and if you want to get your service, you go to the Ford dealer, period. What is the threat to that model?
Yeah, so Your Honor, first of all, page 161 to 162 of the Allstate decision identifies that very conflict as the reason we need dealers. It's the reason why Lucids and there it was Ford cannot sell direct to consumers because of the conflict. The conflict's the same one that Allstate has. A warranty repair to a manufacturer
is an expense. If they can repair the vehicle directly, then how does that play into why is selling them the vehicle when we're talking about repair? That repair is the example you're using, but they're allowed to directly repair. So can you help with that, please?
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Elrod, there's a false assumption in that question.
Okay,
which is
I didn't mean to make a false assumption.
No,
help me figure it out.
The false assumption is that Lucid says they can engage in these kind of repairs.
Can they
No.
I thought the law allowed them to.
It does not. Your Honors, this court, the Texas law says unequivocally that a manufacturer cannot act in the capacity of a dealer. Page 510.
So they're not allowed to repair cars or to sell cars.
Correct. Page 510 of this court's decision in Ford.
Does Texas agree with you?
Your Honor, whether Texas is enforcing the law as strictly as they should be is not the issue. The law says exactly what it says.
No, Texas doesn't agree with you that that's the law, I don't think.
But, Your Honor, page 510 of the Ford decision explains what capacity of dealer is. Plain language, it means performing a function of a licensed dealer.
Assuming, arguendo, that Texas is correct, that they can do the repairs, how does your argument work then?
It gets to the point there that a consumer is not required to go to a manufacturer. Under the Lucid model, you're required to go to the manufacturer. Consumers benefit from having an independent person.
You can't go to just independent shop on the street under the Lucid model?
Under the Lucid model, listen to Lucid's explanation. No one has the expertise for their cars. By having a dealership in the dealership network, you have people learning vehicles, learning the ability to sell. You put a middle person in place to protect consumers.
Have expertise for the cars, is that because they're not given access to have their car safety videos or whatever training? They weren't blocked from that, then people would have the expertise?
Your Honor, at this point, we're talking about a hypothetical, but I think that is right, that the reason is...
That's what we live on, hypotheticals.
Exactly. And at some level, Judge Higginbotham, what Lucid wants to do is engage in an experiment. And Texas has seen this before, and it's failed before. There's been instances where Ford, back in the early days of the automobile, this is the same argument Ford made. We need to sell directly. And they realized they couldn't do that. The problem we have here is we have an established model that protects consumers. It also does other things. Judge Higginbotham, in your opinion, in St. Joseph's Abbey, you referenced the Houston taxicab case. Providing full services is something dealership networks provide, just like the Houston taxicab situation. Dealers have better access to knowing the insurance markets, to help working with their customers. Trade-ins. Lucid wanted to start this whole process without taking trade-ins, not providing services customers need.
What is the point about the taxicab? I mean, last night I was at the Bush Airport, and I'll tell you that there were taxis available, but the Ubers, you had a 25-minute wait. So, because it is a new model now. I'm sorry, can you help?
Yes.
What is the example there?
The Houston taxicab case is one of this court's precedent cited. Judge Higginbotham, you cited it. Mm-hmm. It was an issue where Houston gave a preference for taxicab licenses to larger companies over small companies,
right,
and was subject to a due process challenge, substantive due process, saying it's not treating fairly the smaller companies. The problem was, and this court upheld it, said it is a perfectly rational basis because the larger companies are providing better service.
So it's, you can So basically, we should stay out of it because we're not, nobody elected us to anything, and we should let Texas, if they don't want to experiment with the future because they want to make, keep it the same, then that's their business.
Your Honor, in this forum, that's not exactly how I would have phrased it, but that is a point we agree with.
Okay.
Here we have a problem because look at the model. It's a model that evolves. This is not someone's national origin of where they were born. This is a business model that they can change on the whim. One of your honors asked about what's Lucid doing. Lucid issued a public press release last week about what they're doing. They're still focusing on direct-to-consumer in the United States, but other places in the world, they're starting experimenting on new models, agents, brokers. That's the problem. Lucid is asking this court to look at what they say they're doing today, and there's no commitment that they have to follow that in the future. So what's going to happen if this court were to agree with Lucid, and then next week they decide they want to do something slightly different? They want to be able to sell in El Paso, and so they want to get help from someone in El Paso so they don't have to build brick-and-mortar stores. If Lucid does that, have they just walked themselves out of whatever judicially created exception they obtained here?
Look, I assume that you sue them.
Well, Your Honor,
that you'd sue them and say, now, aha, you have a dealer now you're working with in a model, and so you can't do that anymore because the Ford case and the Tesla case wouldn't, I mean...
Your Honor, that raises a couple of questions. First, who has standing to sue them? And second,
well,
what about the consumer?
Consume.
What about the consumer? That is the model that they should not be doing. This court has upheld repeatedly. Essentially, what Lucid is trying to do is create what they call an as-applied challenge, but is no different than what Tesla tried to do, page 530 of the Tesla opinion. They're trying to get a higher standard of review for what's really just the same facial challenge. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Appreciate your candor with the court in your argument. Mr. Grossman?
Just a few points on rebuttal.
But I have a question. Even if we were very sympathetic to the economics of this, having experienced economists, antitrust people here, and that sort of thing, what do we do with the fact that there's language in this Tesla opinion that's really bad for you, and we have a very strict rule of orderliness in our circuit?
So the ultimate holding of Tesla, Your Honor, is that Tesla simply didn't carry its burden, particularly with respect to what the court called, and I quote, the possible harms of vertical integration. I think that kind of made sense because if you look at Tesla's opening brief, for example, it doesn't even discuss vertical integration, notwithstanding that Ford, as well as International Truck, recognize that as a plausible state interest in this area. So we take Tesla at its word that that was the basis of its holding. My friend spoke about the nature of the claim that was at issue in Tesla. As we describe in our brief, Tesla did plead both a facial as and an as-applied, both facial and as-applied claims. It only proceeded, however, with the facial claim, and I think Tesla explained why in its petition for rehearing en banc. Tesla's position was that there was a 2017 amendment and that that was the thing that caused the prohibition to apply to Tesla, and it was challenging that facially. The court said, we're not going to look at your facial challenge in that nature. We're going to look at your facial challenge as challenging the statutory scheme as it exists. That has nothing to do with this case. We only bring in as-applied challenge. Tesla could have argued its case differently, but it didn't. I think the reason why, and I don't want to fault Tesla's counsel on this, their real focus of their case was about the composition of the Motor Vehicle Board in the state of Louisiana, its due process and antitrust claims. They just weren't focused on this.
So what would you have this panel write? What do you want exactly?
We want the court to simply address the as-applied claim as we've pleaded and argued it. And ideally, we'd like the court to recognize that there is, as we urged in our motion for summary judgment, no rational basis for the application of the prohibition to a direct sales-only manufacturer like Lucid. Or at the least, I think it would make sense for the court to vacate and remand to the district court for further proceedings.
Okay. What does the market look like if we agreed with you?
It looks exactly like the market does today, with the only difference being that there are more competitors in Texas's market because Lucid and other direct sales-only manufacturers can then participate in this market. And I want to be clear, My friends have both referenced, oh, there are economists on both sides. There's actually not any dispute between the experts on what I view as the relevant issue here, which is simply that, as our expert recognized, and I think it's just a common sense matter, allowing more competitors to enter the market, competitors who are currently barred from the market, can only increase competition. So all this argument about, you know, well, costs, and there are all these complex economic decisions, this is something I think that you don't really need an economist to figure out. I mean, we've got our economist, she said that. In other words, there is no evil that the prohibition here is directed at. All it does is keep additional competitors out of the market.
Does the prohibition make it unlawful for you to sell cars online directly to consumers in Texas?
So I want to be very precise in my terms here, because the real question is, are we doing it in Texas or not? And so when a consumer in Texas purchases a Lucid vehicle today, that consumer is not doing it from a dealership in Texas. They're doing it from a dealership in some other state where Lucid is licensed to sell directly. So
the answer to my question is yes, they can purchase it online, and no, it's not unlawful.
They can purchase it online, but if you want to think about where the rubber meets the road, if I may complete my answer to this question, it's a very difficult dance, because you can go to, today, a Lucid studio. There's one 20 miles up the road on I-45.
Plano?
Pardon?
Is it in? No.
There's one in Houston.
I'm
right?
In a whole different place.
You can look at a demonstration vehicle. You can ask questions about the vehicle's technologies. If you ask, what is the price? The representative of SAMP, not allowed to tell you that. And if you say, well, nonetheless, I would still like to purchase it, their response is, not allowed to tell you about that. Can't have anything to do with that. You might be able to find more information online. So no, they can't really undertake sales activity in the state of Texas.
If they can show the cars in the state of Texas.
They can show the models in the state of Texas. They can't show vehicles that are...
They can't say, this is your car.
Exactly. They can't show you a vehicle that you could then purchase. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We appreciate all the arguments in this case. Very interesting case. The case is submitted. The court will take a 10-minute recess before considering the remaining cases for the day.